1979, Kylo Okuna, Alex Castro interviewing Lauren P. Thurston. Lauren, I appreciate very much your letting us interview you, and someday we'll go down in history in Volume 2 of The Outrigger. You were telling me that you were an early member of The Outrigger.
I believe it was 2 weeks after the club was first started by Alexander Hume Ford.
2 weeks? That was in 1908.
Yeah.
And how did you, what motivated you to join?
Well, I had started to do some surfboard riding out at the aquarium, which at that time was run by my uncle, F.A. Potter. And so I used to ride the surf there inside the reef. And I decided I'd like to go in where there were a group of people around, and my father told me one night that there was a club called the Outrigger being established, and would I like to join? I said yes. So I joined, he joined for me rather, and the club consisted of two grass houses, one in which we kept our surfboards in, and canoe paddles, and the other our bathing suits. And then there was a shack that we all dressed in, hanging our clothes on the floor. And that was my earliest recollection of the Outrigger.
Two grass shacks.
No, they were not grass shacks in my memory. Perhaps they were. I don't remember offhand.
We have a picture on the first pages of the Outrigger history, this book which I'm showing you. Are those the houses that you remember?
That's right.
Yeah, those are the houses.
They are grass, well, they're coconut covered. They're not really grass shacks, but the facsimile of them, yeah.
And then did you do a lot of surfing? Did you do any canoeing?
Yes, I did a great deal, I suppose. And I paddled on the Outrigger's senior crew down Honolulu Harbor at about 1912, I believe it was. I can't remember the dates exactly. That was about the last official race that they had. They gave it up and it died as a sport for quite a few years. In 1930, about then, I could check up the date on a scrapbook probably. E.E. Black came to me and he had just finished the new road from Kailua to just beyond Puwawau Ranch. And he used the first bulldozers in Hawaii, which were a great improvement over the old mule and shovel scraper. He made a lot of money on the job. I was the advertiser at the time. I was at that time assistant manager, and he asked if I had any suggestion as to what he might do to show his appreciation to his employees and to the people of Kona for this job, which meant a great deal to him. And after thinking it over some time, I talked to Dad Center and suggested that perhaps we might start canoe racing again. And he encouraged me. To make a long story short, I raised enough money to get medals for all the races. There were seven. Princess Kwananakoa was one of the principal donors. I came to Kona and interested Julian Yates and Louis McFarlane and what's his name from Milo
Romina Lee.
His name is Eugene Calpico.
Oh, yes, a very famous name.
He is still the leader of all the village of Romina Lee. Chili Childs, who's the head of American Factors, who became interested from the Kailua standpoint. And I believe there was one other, a Portuguese, not Rodrigues. The name slips my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, they organized canoe crews from Kailua, from Napopo, from Honaunau, and from Iloilo to compete against crews, and we were able to get the Huinelas interested and the Outrigger Club interested. And I believe that was all for the first race, which was held off the beach at Napopo, from Napopo to Captain Cook's Monument, and back again for the longer races, that being very smooth water. And the second year was held in the same place. One of the problems involved was how to get the many boys, over 100, here. I didn't have the money to pay for their steamship fares, and there were no planes. And we finally worked out a proposition with the U.S. Coast Guard, who were able to bring them over in daylight hours, not spending any night on board. And we were able to get facilities to house the boys at the home of I believe it was well, the name again slips me. He was a minister at Kyoho, where we had the Outrigger and Huinelo, and of course the local boys had their own homes. The first and second races at Napopo, I think, were the greatest, and from a standpoint of attendance, the Inter-Island Steamship Company ran a special excursion of the Haleakala. There were four or five official boats from the U.S. Navy. There were two from Australia, and probably 15 yachts.
Did the Haleakala go over to Kona?
Especially to see the race.
Right here.
And following the races, the Kona Inn, which at that time was run by George Cherry, who was always most helpful, gave a big luau and dance for everybody concerned, which I think was the biggest crowd of people I've ever seen at the Kona Inn. Perfect night. The second year, same thing happened, except that we had one of the heaviest rains I'd ever seen in Kailua Kona. And we had quite a time getting the boys back to the Coast Guard to the ship to get out of the rain. There wasn't any room in the Kona Inn.
Did the Outrigger place in either of those races?
Yes, as I recall it, they won three out of the five races, I believe. The newspaper accounts would carry that.
Well, that's an interesting, that was the rebirth of canoeing then.
It really was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a rebirth of the building of racing canoes, which I think was probably as important. Up to that time, the Outrigger had the famous old Hanakioki, which was built under the supervision of Dr. Alfred Wall, who had built some years before that, the Leo Keo Keo, which was used by the Huinello Club, a wonderfully fast racing canoe. That was about all we had to start with. I donated a canoe of my own called the Kakina, which I had bought in Napopo some years prior. And it was not too successful, but it was a good four-man canoe.
Mm-hmm.
Too short, relief to be a six-man, but we were limited as to canoes. I believe it was Dad Center and Toots Minville that were basically responsible for getting enough interest together so the directors of the Outrigger Club finally, underwrote the cost of building a new canoe, which in turn was called the Kakina. Kakina, K-I-N-A, means Thurston in old Hawaii, and they were kind enough to name it after me. My boat was retired to the use of the girls for a few years, and now I think it's hanging on the ceiling of some bar or someplace, I don't know.
Would that be the one that's hanging on the ceiling of the bar room at the Outrigger Canoe Club?
No, that is not it.
That's not it, huh?
No.
Well, that's very interesting. And is the Kakina 2 still extant?
The Kakina 2 is still there, well kept by the Outrigger Club.
By the Outrigger Club. Going back a little bit, Lauren, you said 1930. We skipped quite a ways between 1908 to 1930. You went to Yale, didn't you? And you were a swimmer there of some note, as I recall.
Well, I went to Lawrenceville Prep School on a senior year at the prep school. My father thought I was too young to go to college, and I think he was right. So there I went into joined their swimming team and was quite fortunate enough to be a member of their winning prep school team. Matter of fact, I defeated their captain in swimming, who had up to that time broken every interscholastic record. His name is Tom Luke. I don't remember the times. But anyhow, we got to Yale through the intervention of Jack Galt and his wife, who were coming back from Yale on their honeymoon to settle in Hawaii. J.R. Galt, who was president of the Hawaiian Trust, was also a member of the Yale Admission Society staff or group, and he suggested I should go to Yale. Well, I finally got in, which is another long story, but my swimming record had not hurt me any. I classed myself more as a diver than I did as a swimmer, although I had swum for the Outrigger Club on a number of occasions in their relay teams.
The Outrigger had swimming teams. Where did you have most of your races?
In Honolulu Harbor.
Honolulu Harbor.
And
the YMCA, perhaps?
YMCA, yes.
We have a picture.
The University of Hawaii tank was used on a couple of occasions, but principally the Honolulu YMCA and, more importantly, Honolulu Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Around Pier 5 or 6. I tried out for the swimming team at Lawrenceville, and the coach said, "What do you do?" And I said, "Well, I do a bit of diving." They had only a 1 meter board about 3 feet off the ocean. I was used to diving from a board anywhere from 12 to 16 feet off the water. And I said, "I'm not used to but the low board, the timing is totally different. The coach said, well, try it out and see what you can do. So I did the best I could, but it was pretty poor. And so the coach said, he said, you've done some swimming. And I said, yes. And explained how and where, on the low, the outer canoe club. Well, he said, let's see you swim. Swim up the pool and back. He had a 25-yard pool. He called to a man by the name of Tom Luke. And he said, here, Tom, swim this guy up and back. And I said very naively, do you want me to swim for form? Or he said, no, beat this guy. I didn't know it, but Tom Luke had beaten every interscholastic record in the East at that time. I beat him by about half the length of the pool coming back, and the coach, who was Daddy Mann of the Detroit Athletic Club, said, my friend, you're not a diver, you're a swimmer. And I never dove again. At Yale, they had very fine swimmers.
What class were you at Yale?
117. Missed the majority of a year during the war, 18, and graduated in 1921.
And Luke was, did Luke go on with you in the swimming team?
Who?
This fellow Luke that you beat.
Oh, no, he went to another school. I don't remember where. Mm-hmm. I left Lawrenceville intending to go to Cornell, but I got talked out of it by Jack Galt, and perhaps due to my swimming ability, was able to get into Yale through the back door.
Well, that's a good way to get in.
I'm very glad that door opened for me.
Lauren, when you got back from college, were the swimming teams still operating at the Outrigger Canoe Club?
Yes.
Organized?
Yes. I got immersed in my own business activities at that time, and I did not take any part in swimming thereafter, as I recall it, for the Outrigger Club after I got through college.
Well, obviously, because of business pressures, you weren't able to continue with your competitive athletics. But did you keep up with your surfing?
Oh, yes.
As a young man?
It was my principal hobby.
Oh, was it really?
Yes.
Do you have any of your boards left?
No. I gave my... Well, let's go back to the beginning. I started with a redwood board. I remember the lumber cost me $8. It cost me $20 to have it made by Edric Cook.
Edric Cook.
Edric Cook, who was a longtime member of the Outer Club. Later on, some years, I can't remember the exact date, why I brought in the first balsa board ever to be used. Dad Center said it was too light. It would never work out, but he was the one that bought the second balsa board for Hawaii.
As I recall, those balsa boards came in about 1932, somewhere in there.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, I had one.
That was the time that Tom Blake was making his extra long paddle boards that were so successful in establishing speed records. But the light balsa wood, which later was developed with co-op paneling or oak paneling or some kind of hardwood in between the soft
That's right.
layers of balsa, followed, and shortly after that, why they became Tom Blake went into the manufacturing of hollow boards. And I think he was the first one to put on a tail skeg, as I recall it.
That would be when, about the 40s maybe?
No, I think it was around the early 30s.
Oh, I didn't realize the skeg was that old.
Yeah, I think it was around the early 30s. That was the one great criticism I had of my board, that you get on a first break wave, which is very steep, and It cut toward the Diamond Head, and the tail was able to skid around in front of you, and you got anchor with Tico. But I gave my board to my son, and he was the one who put the tail keg on it, and that was just created a new board out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It had the lightness so that you could paddle and get good speed on it, and the tail keg held in the wave so that you wouldn't skid on it, no matter how steep the wave. I later gave that board to the Outrigger Canoe Club. They wanted it for their historic room, and I've never heard whether it was used or has been misused or misplaced or so on.
Well, it's interesting that you should come to that point, because I was talking with Sarge Kahanamoku the other day, getting ready for a similar interview next week, and he had the same experience. And I suppose that those boards are somewhere, but at the moment, I don't know whether yours is identified. You've heard the talk, haven't you, that they're trying to get a surfboard museum?
Well, what's the name of the boy that run all these surfing meets out at Sunset Beach, Makaha?
Oh, Freddie Hemmings?
Yes. He was the one that talked me into donating my board to the Outrigger Club. I'd finally give it to the Bishop Museum, who had asked for it.
Well, we'll go in search of it. Maybe Fred or some of the surfers would know. It might have been put away for safekeeping rather than for use.
I hope so, because it was famous only from the standpoint it was the first balsa board.
Mm-hmm.
If it, the theater club has not taken care of it, I'll regret it very much, because the Bishop Museum did want it to have it in their surfboard collection.
Well, I promise you that when we get back, I'll make a personal search for it.
Fred Hemmings should know
where it is.
He was the one who I delivered it to the club in his name, and he was the one who talked me into it. And I thought that certainly it would be the ideal place for a board which was an innovation to be as a historic fact. My feelings have been a little bit hurt. It's never been acknowledged by the directors or by the club or by anybody else.
Well, you're going to get an acknowledgement, I can promise you that. Lauren, when did you give up surfing? At what age?
I gave up surfing at the age of 65. In 1965.
Is that right? Well, I don't think there are many 65-year-old surfers out there now. At least I haven't seen any. So maybe you've got a record like that, too. One of the first to join and one of the oldest to stay.
Yes, I guess I was there as long as anybody. I guess Dad Santa was there a little bit longer than I was, but not very much.
Not much. But you're still a member of the club.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me a non-residence membership because I live permanently here in Kona and only get to the to Honolulu, well, maybe once in two or three years. But I still maintain that membership. I've never used the present dressings. I don't even know where they are.
Well, they're there, and they're very fancy compared to the ones in the old club. It's certainly more fancy than the ones that you used in 1908. It's quite obvious in looking through our first book here, on page 109 as a reference to you. Evidently in 1955, there was quite a soul-searching going on in the club as to whether they should give up Waikiki Beach by the Royal Hawaiian or move somewhere else. And you're quoted as stating that the Outrigger Canoe Club should stay on Waikiki Beach and hoping, of course, that you might be able to stay, according to this article in our book, you might stay there. Do you recall that difference of opinion?
Yes, I do very, very definitely. I believe I even said that if the club moved, I would not. But I later came to my senses on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the club could have gone ahead, even though the cost was very considerable in those days, at its old site, if there had been enough power behind it. But there was not. I personally got in bad with the membership of the Outer Group because I was present when we were forced to raise the dues from $1 a month to $1.50. $18 a year, and that was not a popular move at all. It was during my second term as president of the club, and I think I'm the only one who was the president for 2 years.
That would be about what year?
Around 28, 29. I've been told that all records of my term of office have disappeared and are not available in the club file.
Well, we've gradually been finding some old records in the move, evidently. There was a whole set of records that were lost or misplaced. Some of them have been found, and we still have a big gap. And that's one of the reasons why we want these memoirs from you and some of the senior members of our club, because they're very valuable to us, and your memory is very strong. But I think we'll be able to locate them as we keep looking.
Well, I believe I was a director or an officer of the club for 18 years. And I was the only one who was elected president twice, as I recall it. That's because nobody else would take the job. The club was about ready to go under and was having a very hard time financially. And I agreed to take it again. Fortunately, Walter McFarlane came in at that time, and it was through his enthusiasm and his ability that the club as it now stands was finally financed and made possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was quite a big drive around town, wasn't it?
Yes,
Walter Mack was chairman of?
Yes, he did a marvelous job.
Mm-hmm. Well, then the club survived the Depression, and let's see, when was the last club built there by the Royal? When it was next to the Royal Hawaiian Hotel.
Your records would be much better than mine. I don't really remember.
I think that was in the middle 30s or something.
Huh? Well, no, it would That's going back about 50 years.
Well, it's going back at least 35 years. Lauren, so you lost the argument, but you kept your membership.
Yes, and I did not resign.
Well, what do you think of the club and where it is now?
Well, I think it's done very well. So many things have changed today as compared to what they used to be. I still think that it would have been better had we been able to finance the old area between the Moana and the Royal, but perhaps that's better, in better use today than it would have been had the club been there. I think the present location is excellent, and we're very fortunate to have what we've got there.
Yes, everybody seems to, most people seem to like it very much, and with the way that old area next to the Royal has gotten crowded up and so forth, it appears that the move was fortuitous because the parking lot certainly would have gone by the board.
And it would have been land that was far too expensive to be used as a club.
Yes, that was, I think it was the cost factor as much as anything else that made the move.
New little bits of boards that they use nowadays should be there.
We're going back again, Lauren. I'd asked you, and the tape was off. I like the idea of having a surfboard museum there at the club, and the boards that you think are what? You said you thought Duke Hanamoku's was there?
Well, Fred Hemmings, I believe.